What I observe, especially in Vietnam, right, the more features, the more complex that you have in the app, actually people just hate it. It's not, and that's why Timo actually is always strive for simplicity. So basically, I love to build companies, I love to build teams, I love to build products.
I see.
And sometimes I put myself, I'm labeling myself as a builder, as a manager. I couldn't really plan the career for them.
I see.
And then it struck me that I couldn't plan the career for myself as well.
Welcome to Vietnam Rising Podcast, where we chase dreams and opportunities in Vietnam and also get real with challenges and reality. On this season of Vietnam Rising, I'm your host, Minh Tâm, and you and I will sit down with the shakers and movers in Vietnam to hear about their real stories and why Vietnam is still the place to be. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Vietnam Risings. And today, on this episode, we are going to have Anan, CEO of Timo. And today, he's coming here sharing a lot about Timo's next phase, because they're having a lot of exciting things happening soon, as well as his career path in being in startup for more than 10 years.
Thank you, Minh Tâm. Hello, everyone. My name is Bùi Hải An. As Tom just shared, I'm CEO of Timo. And for the past 10 years, I've been founding several companies, mostly in tech. I'm happy to be here today. And we have a lovely chat together.
So recently, Timo actually have been transitioning from a different bank to another bank, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you tell me more about it?
Timo have been founded for 5 years, and starting from July, we notified the old bank partner saying that hey, we need to terminate contract, and then we will work with another bank partner.
Okay, so Timo, first for the audience, is the digital bank.
Yeah, a digital bank.
The digital bank. I believe it's one of the fastest growing brand in financial services.
The first one, and one of the fast growing one. Even have the award like the best digital bank.
Well, I mean,
in Vietnam.
I agree in that because basically, when it was launching, and then like you guys able to acquire so many millennials or younger generations, where other banks has not been able to do that a lot. And then you guys did that, and then you also able to acquire a lot of expat foreigners as customers as well.
Actually, I think what Timo did is leading the transformation for digital banking in Vietnam. 5 years ago, you don't have any like mobile banking apps or a really usable one. After that, right now, actually, you look at on the bank, the mobile app is much better.
Yeah.
So we don't want to claim credit, but but I think that's a natural development.
Yes.
And right now, with the new launch for Timo Plus. We also want to be leading in other things, and actually this have for the consumers actually. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's good, right? So before, I feel like the bank doesn't care much about the app because they're so big and everybody needs bank for something. So they don't really feel like they have to compete against each other, right?
But
now there's a competition factor coming in where customer has a better choice.
Yes.
So they would actually go there.
Yeah, and also the customer expectation, right? So for millennial like you, you're expecting the much better experience both in the app itself and also while you do banking. You don't want to wait at the bank, you don't want to like being frustrated.
Yes, that's true. But how so you guys have something very particular that was quite interesting when I first found out about Timo is that you have Timo Hangout.
Yep.
So that's where it's like an office where transactions locations for everybody to open a card, like open an account, they go there. But the setting is really different compared to a traditional bank, where it's actually a cafe as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a hybrid model. It's a cafe. And you go there. First of all, you will be like giving a free coffee. If you will open a bank account. And you enjoy your time there while getting your account set up. So we want to create a different experience for customers from when they actually opening the bank account. And the hangout model is actually one of our uniqueness, and actually the customer really like it.
Yeah, but I feel like, well, I mean, Timo transactions or like the procedure time is actually quite fast.
Yeah.
So I would say if you give them a customer a drink, maybe they stay a bit longer and may delay your queue.
That's okay.
Okay, that's good.
Because actually, I think the customer don't really want to go to the bank.
Uh-huh.
So the opening the account is where you have to do the whole KYC, know your customer process. You have to be there,
yes,
to meet the bank staff. So now they cannot really avoid that. So we want to make that change to be memorable.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, you don't really have to go to see it. You don't really want to see it, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Everything mm-hmm. need to be happen in the app so that it will be fast, it will be easy, and then you can transact anytime, right?
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I done a lot of my banking transaction while I'm on the motor grab bike,
uh-huh.
on the back of the grab bike, and yes. then I do all the transaction I want.
That's
I think
true.
That's how things should be, right?
Mm-hmm. I feel like, yeah, that's what technology should be like. It's a tool where it's enhanced your lifestyle in many different ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so right now, Timo just finished or is in transitioning from an old bank. What was that?
VB Bank.
So what's the role of VB Bank?
So,
but with Timo?
So VB Bank is a bank partner.
Uh-huh.
They provide it's about a back end. So,
I see.
So on the car banking, the accounts is from the bank partner. For Timo, we provide a front end on the beauty stuff.
I see.
It means the app, it means on the customer interaction, call centers, on interaction with customer we taken by Timo.
Yeah.
But the account still need to be in a traditional bank, an actual bank.
Yeah.
Because that be regulated by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now VBank is used to be our own banking partner. Right mm-hmm. now we are connecting with Viet Capital Bank.
I see.
Yeah.
And were Viet Capital is one of the is already in the options like right now or when you decide that do you need to leave VB Bank, that's when you find Viet Capital?
Of course we have a new partner for a while,
uh-huh.
and successfully integrate with them, testing everything, and
uh-huh.
then we announce the switch.
I see. And VB Bank didn't do anything to stop you guys?
No, actually, because it's a commercial relationship and it's a mutually agreed that, hey, we give you a 3-month notice and then we stop the contract
uh-huh.
or agreement and then we start the new one.
I see.
And of course, that's still a painful process, especially for the customers. That's where we really want to make sure everything will be very easy for the customer to choose, right? If they want to stay with VB Bank, this is what they do. They download the VB Bank online app and then they continue to transact with VB Bank.
Uh-huh.
If they want to continue with Timo or Timo Plus, they have to download the new app and actually have to go through the whole KYC process again.
I see.
But we try to make everything much, much easier for them.
Mm-hmm.
If we're given a choice, we would really want to put our customer through that transition
mm-hmm.
because a lot of confusions and people are frustrated. But for what we are going to be able to do in the future with the new partner, I think that worth it, and
mm-hmm.
we hope the customer understand. And actually, until this time, we have a significant customer actually still believe in that and transition to the new platform with us already.
Yes, I see. So, what would the customer could expect from Timo Plus after this transitioning?
Yeah. So the promise we're giving out there is that with the new partner, we are about we able to continue to innovate,
uh-huh.
Continue to develop more products,
mm-hmm.
and also have a more stable system to serve the customers. With the past relationship, there's a lot of limitations.
I see.
That on what we can do. And with the new partner and also together with the share futures, there's many bigger plans that we have in place right now. And we will introduce more, actually, especially starting from next year. So until the end of the year, we still go into a transition and make sure everyone who want to continue with Timo is still being taken care of. And all the new team will be started from next year.
So in traditional industries, for example, like banking or in medical, for example, like painful is the expectations,
yeah,
would you say? And then now with more startups and technology or new brands coming in with who created a better and smoother customer experience, it's forced those old slow industry to move forward into what the customer want and to more customer centric.
I don't think banful is something that people expect.
Well, I mean, it's like you don't know how bad it is until if you have a lover who abuse you and you never have anyone else who love you, you would think that that's the love of your life.
I agree. I mean, like, I think it's more about with the market, customer will have more optionality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And as long as they've been exposed to it, they will, of course, only want something more.
Right? Yeah. Like, it just, I think the biggest example is just like Grab and Uber, right?
Yeah.
The taxi industry was also kind of a painful experience around the war. Yeah. And then they come in with a new method to transportation or to move around.
Yeah.
And people are just like, oh, okay, why do we have to accept the taxi industry where they don't recognize and treasure the customer as much as the new startups that are coming in.
Yep.
Yeah.
And actually, from the last episode, about customer experience, you and another speaker discussed about Grab, right?
Yes.
I really like that discussion because I also a true believer compare Grab with Uber, right? You don't really need that fancy technology like Uber to really sell the market in Vietnam, but rather how you can boot off other things. So the Grab success is not just from the app, but a lot of all the offline thing that they did, right? From the driver, from ability to actually incentivize the driver to drive and be able to dumb down the step in the app so that everyone can understand.
Yeah.
So I think the experience is much, much more. And then translate to what we are talking, right? So it's not about you build a very fancy app for digital bank. Actually, for banking, what I observe, especially in Vietnam, right, the more features, the more complex that you have in the app, actually people just hate it. It's not, and that's why Timo actually always try for simplicity.
I see.
And as you are a user, it's very easy to understand what to expect. To do when you're opening a Timo app, right?
Yes. So you from a technical background, and there's a question. So, well, for me, I'm curious that if you like, how do you simplify things? Because I feel like as someone who growing a product and wanting to build a lot of things, like sometimes you want to offer a lot of different things to the customer, but yes, as you say, simplicity is what the customer want. And how do you know when to limit your temptations?
I guess it's all about listening, understand, looking at the customers, what they are trying to achieve, right? I think it's also about try to remove your temptations.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of rules in terms of product management on how you have to really focus on deliver what the customer want. I think it's more about discipline that when you want try to build some features, and you have to always ask yourself and the team is that what is the end goal, the end result that the customer want to achieve, and we need to deliver that first. And anything we added it in, we always have to consider that would that be a distraction or not.
Yes.
So I think it's a mentality of the product team and maybe the management of the company where they believe they're smarter than the customers and they should be the one who offer this and that. But maybe for the customer,
sometimes you gotta remove your ego.
Yes, you gotta remove your ego. You don't, and especially sometimes you need to eat your own dog food there as well because.
What do you mean dog food? Hold on. So, what do you mean dog food?
So the term in product the management is eat your own dog food. It means that you really have to use your product.
Okay.
So
if
you if you build something, if you're not using it enough, then you don't see on the cases and the scenarios that people are going through. So for example, for me, I'm using the Timo app like almost every day. I always try to think of something that so I can use and understand because it's very different if you use the app once a month compared to like once every day. And you will understand what all the pain point that the customer going through when they're using your product.
I see.
Yeah. And because I also built several product team before, and we've been through the exercise, right? When you design the product, when you put into the UI, mockup, wireframe, all these things, it's very exciting. And you can dream a lot. And when you're dreaming, when you imagine new stuff, right? Can you bring down to reality?
Yeah.
So that's something very critical for product development.
I see. Right now, for my banking experience with all the apps that are in the market right now, I feel like banks try to do a lot of promotion and discount with partners, with brands, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I feel like there's one functions that people will love is that how much they really save on it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know how much I got saved from using those brand deals at all. Because I just see, you know, my money getting decreased. I don't know how much I save within that. Yeah. You know, so I feel like, I don't know, maybe an idea that if you can show a stat on, oh, you saved this amount of money using Temu, spending all the things that you pay, then yeah, I think people will love and rather use Temu over other products.
Yeah, actually, you already sneaking into what we are building.
Oh yay! I fill the niche.
So I think that's a real niche, for example, right? Of course, we are considering many different features, like you say. One interesting cool idea is that it's conscript. Meaning like every time you transact, right, we can help you to round up. For example, if you buy something like $98,000, it can round up to $10,000, $100,000, and the $2,000 will be put in your biggie bank.
Okay.
So that's some sort of like forcing you to save a little bit every day.
Okay.
So that will be working toward on how I can save more.
I see.
And that's a small function, right? And like you say, as long as you understand and been like the app collecting all the saving that you've been through, you will understand the value of all this promotion more.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're working toward that.
I see. Yeah, because like right now, a lot of notifications are, oh yeah, you're gonna save X amount of money if you use Temu or other banks to swipe your card, but you don't really see how much the percentage is or how many deals I get or stuff, and you don't really know how much or if you're applicable to that deals.
So
I feel like that would be something that people would really interested in to know more.
Actually for some of other digital bank in the world, they have some other cool idea. For example, they will give reward you for saving, right? So if you put aside a certain amount, there will be like gamification system where it will be giving points and you can accumulate enough points so that you can maybe put into a better deposit rate, for example. So on this thing depends on what's the appeal the product want to give to the customer. So if Temu want to appeal to those people like really like saving, like so we work toward that to make sure that hey, Temu is very good for saving. And I will use Temu because it helped me to save more. So that if we put that out as some objective, then we'll go with all the feature that supporting that kind of objective.
But then, well, so right now we're getting in a economic depressions right now, right? I assume that banks would want you to spend more at the moment or like loan money right now, right? Then how do you push that if you're if you're building a lot of functions on saving?
Saving is one example. So,
I see.
And to us, we define Temu is three things. One is easy, the other convenience, and the last one is actually values. Values he mean value for money. Of course, you still have the need to spend money, right?
Yes.
You still have the need to borrow money. As a bank, we need to provide that for you. The question is that would that be valuable? Would that be something that you say, oh, it's worth it? And that coming from many different aspects. For example, even if you borrow money from a bank, the interest is one thing, right? But the process you go through, or whether you've been reminded to pay the money, or maybe you will be waived this fee and that fee. So the whole experience is more important. And to Timo, we look at the whole experience, and all the needs is still there. People still have to do all these kind of banking activities,
yes.
And how we can really revolutionize that,
yeah.
Is what we're working on.
I see. Well, like from what you're telling me right now, I feel like you've been in banking for so many years. I can't believe that you only been with Timo for like a year, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And before that, were you from banking or where?
Actually, I am an engineering by trade.
I see.
But I work in so many different areas of the business. So I'm not really know who or what is the profession of me anymore.
Okay.
Maybe just a startup guy and an entrepreneur. So basically, I love to build companies. I love to build teams. I love to build products.
I see.
And sometimes I put myself, I'm labeling myself as a builder.
I see. Yeah. And can you tell me a bit more about the startup that you've been with before Timo?
So before Timo, I founded a company called O2 Financial. Mm. Basically, it's... it's a venture builder focused on finding good opportunities cross section between banking, finance, and also consumers. Mm. So one of the company that been coming out of that is called Bravo HR.
Mm.
So Bravo HR is a B2B HR tech solutions that provide tools to company to help them to engage, motivate, and reward for their employees. And the idea is coming from that because we have the company to managing all this kind of like benefit, rewards, and compensations, right? We would have to understand more about the financial side of employees,
mm-hmm.
and then we can offer the products to them.
I see.
So O2 Financials been around for 2 years, and actually Timo is also one of project from O2 Financials, and that is more like continuity. But the biggest startup that I did before is called Silicon Stress Saigon. I started in 2013, and actually that's a very exciting one. We are the software development company.
Mm-hmm.
We build products for startups in the regions. So most of our projects are MVP.
I see.
For startup that maybe they only have ideas or business plan, but they don't have tech. People or tech team yet, so
I
they
see.
Work with us so that we can, from the ideas, we develop a whole product, end-to-end development in 2-3 months or 5-6 months,
wow.
and then get the product out into the market so that they can test it and then even like raise funds more. So the interesting thing about Silicon Strait is that at a point of time, it's also start picking up for the whole tech scene in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
So Silicon Strait Saigon happened to get enough projects so that we can hire very talented engineer, designer, and then give them the opportunity to actually build on these things.
Yes, and so they're still working right now, right?
Like we closed it in 2007.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, 2017, sorry.
I see. And why is that?
For us that was an exit. So we've been acquired by one of the big tech company in the region.
I see.
Our small team, and then we also spin up another team,
mm-hmm.
to work with a retail company.
You were the founder member of Silicon Strait, right?
Yep.
And was exiting is always in your plan?
Not really.
I see.
Actually, the Silicon Stress Saigon, normally I call SSS. So SS is actually on the first tech startup that I really involved and then built to the scale that it been significant enough. So we have around 100 billboards in this 7 and do a lot of cool things. But basically, it's still an outsourcing company as a service company.
Yes.
And after like 4 or 5 years in operations, a lot of questions coming up on like where this leading to.
I see.
Because
for your team or for you personally?
For me personally.
I see.
And also the team, because actually, let me say about share about the team first. So the, for the team, right, after the first 1-2 years, they learn a lot by doing, because they build products, they build mobile app, web app, so they learn a lot. But after that, thing becomes routine.
Yes.
Because normally a product only like needs like 3 months to finish, and it's very simple actually after a while.
Yes. Well, I mean, like there's so much unique idea, right?
Yeah.
That would be very similar ones.
Similar one, but the in term of like learning and especially on the technical skills, if you are building MVP, you don't have a chance to actually develop it like really really deep.
I see.
And when you restart a new project, everything just a new setup and keep repeating. So the team also kind of frustrated after a while.
I see.
And of course, some of them move on, getting a very good job out there. I'm happy for them. But for those who want to stay, I having difficulty to actually figure out what's next for them. So basically, as a manager, I couldn't really plan the career for them.
I see.
And then it struck me that I couldn't plan the career for myself as well. Because I also have nothing else to learn. Of course.
As a manager or as...
As a manager, as a company owner. My role is also operation.
Yes.
I mean, taking care of most of the thing at the Saigon office. I have my partner is a CTO and another Singapore partner is more like BDs. I managed to grow the team, building the office, building the cultures, innovate some cool stuff in terms of the organization. For example, we have different type performance review where we call role framework. We have different way to organize the team. We call SWOT, something like that. But like all these things are been limited to what the size of the company and the business that they are doing, right? So in the last 2 years, we managed to get bigger projects.
Like
we work with Bluebird, one of the biggest taxi company in Indonesia, and we work with Singtel in Singapore. We work with 7-Eleven here. But then the nature of my job is not really changing. It's rather recruiting, get new people, make sure everything work well. Even at that point, I didn't think about an exit, but like asking myself on what job I should do, what any learning that I should get from. So I've been in like more than a year into that stage where I need to find the next step for my career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was the next step that you figured out?
The so-called exit happened because we've been approached and then the whole team agreed that would be a very ideal case so that we can move on and do other things. And for me, I actually after we saw part of the company to the tech the big tech guy and then I managed to stay to actually cleaning up. Because we still spun off another team that working with 7-Eleven Vietnam, which I follow with that team. And also for SS, we have others, so-called startups that we incubate, and then I need to clean that up as well.
I see.
Yeah, because we have a CRM companies, we have a digital signage company where we still have customers.
I see.
And there's still a team, and then I need to figure out whether they can be on their own or have to close them. So I have to close all of that like after another year.
I see.
Yeah.
How did the approach thing happen? Like, how do you feel when you got the approach or your team when that happened?
It's to be honest, it's blurry now actually because. That's a good approach because we found because the
was it like, oh hey, we got this offer, and then everybody's like, okay, let's do it? Or is that more of like a debate on if we should do it or not?
I think that we didn't have much of the debate because the offer seems makes sense.
I see.
Of course, if looking back and if we had more experience, we should negotiate for a better one. Mm-hmm. But the offer come in where everyone, I think, feel right. Like, hey, maybe this is the natural cause of things.
I see.
And it resolve what been some sort of like sharp tension between all of the founding team, because we also been stuck somewhat.
Yes.
And okay, this is a good solution.
I see.
And then we just carry on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And how do you help the change transitioning? Because I'm pretty sure that the team, like, who's not in the founding team, yeah, which is like almost 100 people, they must feel really shocked if that happened out of nowhere. So how did you guys communicate that thought or that transitioning to them?
What we did is actually just share them with them everything, and
even
and
when you already have doubt before the offer happened.
No, the doubt is mostly on myself and my career. But in terms of the offer and what we decide for the company is that we just being transparent and say, hey, there's an offer to buy this many people so that they can put into the engineering team in Vietnam. The rest, there's this plan and that plan. Uh-huh. And then we just share with the whole company. That's still a painful process. People are still shocked and sad. And of course, some of them still want staying for another year through the cleanup. Uh-huh. A lot of questions, but I think what we did back then is correct, is that just to be transparent.
I see.
And for the team that been like kind of like be bought over, we arrange a very nice compensation for them as well. Mm. So actually, most of them are very very happy.
I see.
And I think that at that point of time, everyone be confused and in doubt. But if look back right now, it's already 3 years. I guess everyone should think. That's the good thing that had happened.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And would you agree? So I've been reading up on the few article on other startup founders who decide to step down,
yeah,
from the CEO, and then he would just have a break, and he just try to figure out what's the next step. Was that something happened similar to you?
It's funny that you ask that, because I think around a few months ago, I just realized that for the last, 8-9 years, I didn't really have any break.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
It's
like no vacation at all?
No, the vacation, most of the vacation is less than a week.
Oh, okay.
But in terms of break, meaning that I'm not allowing myself to be like unemployed.
I see. Because you feel a stress to always keeping up with everything?
I happen to get everything planning ahead, right? So when I closing something, then I already started something else.
Okay.
So it always like overlapping each other.
I
like
see.
That. Mm-hmm. So there's no real break, like, hey, this is stop, I have 3 months of vacation or sabbatical or anything.
Yeah.
I don't really plan that for myself.
Uh-huh.
But only realized it recently.
I see.
Yeah. So starting from even before SS, the company before that, called TGM, we are doing training development with Tô Tài Giỏi. Maybe you have heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was also doing tech and marketing. Then we split out the company and then start SS. So on the story just keep continues.
Yes.
And even until Timo is a continuous.
It's always been in the transitioning.
Yeah.
But my questions would be, those transitioning, does it satisfy your career, like your goal as career? Like, when do you take the time to realize that, okay, this thing is not the right one, or I need to move on from it,
yeah,
and finding the next one immediately to move to that?
I guess my approach would be, I put more time in reflection, even be like, at least a year before anything happened.
Okay.
Yeah, so I reflect on how things been happening. I'm learning enough. Is there any other opportunities? And actually, I'm planning pretty much further ahead.
Mm.
And maybe because of that, and also maybe because my passion in working or something, that I not allow myself to actually having any like break in between.
I see.
And I'm not unhappy about that.
Uh-huh.
Because there's always something exciting for me to go and to jump in. And actually, even sometimes that, oh, how can I start this new thing earlier, faster? Uh-huh. But then there won't be some obligation cleaning up that required to do to make sure that the transition is clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I own way been excited for the next thing.
I see.
Yeah, because that's what I. Some sort of plan and it happened according to what I'm expecting.
Yeah. It's well. So for me, I feel like it's kind of like I always have these questions for anyone who are style founders who kind of like exiting or decide to exit. For startup, it's kind of a norm to have an exit plan. Like basically you like, okay, after a few years or after your company growth to the percentage play, then it's okay for you to stepping down. But for me coming from a background of traditional business, it's kind of bizarre for me to grab that concept around.
Sure.
Because it's like, so startups or companies are like your babies, right?
Yeah.
And then usually for as a parent, you would take care of them until they are an adult.
Yep.
18 years at least, right? Or else if you ban them then you will be you have illegal issues and you get get caught by the police and stuff.
Yep.
But then for startup, basically it's like your babies start running.
Yeah.
And you just let them do whatever they want.
I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't. I feel pretty much the same a few years ago as that, and how I can even abandon the startups that I built. But then the realization coming in is that the startup that you are currently building, would that, could it break through, or we just. Cruising along, or even sometimes, especially if you are taking VC money, there's only a certain limit of how much you can survive, right?
Yeah.
And I guess for true startup where you are supposed to scale very fast or die, the dying part is somewhat part of the plan as well.
Mm-hmm.
For the traditional business, at least you have to only keep yourself to do well, and then you have the profit to actually feed back in, and everything will be growing. It's just grow fast or slow.
Yeah.
But for startup, it's like okay, I bet this much money in it. If it's not working, I'd rather close it.
I see.
So that's somewhat the mentality for the startup.
Do you ever have the what if questions? Like, what if you stay a little bit longer, or what if you try a little bit harder?
Of course, that's actually one way some delicacy right there. Right?
Yeah.
It's not about. I don't think any founder would be really giving up too soon. The moment when people perceive they're giving up, that the founder might already like try only the thing they can.
Yeah.
It's not like oh, it's not working. I'm giving up, but rather I give him my best shot. But I only have 1 month left of runway. Even in my case, I would imagine the company in the next 1 year. Would that can change anything? Because maybe the idea is wrong, the product is wrong, the market is wrong. Anything that whatever significant change coming in, would that really change the faith of the company?
Yeah.
And that's where you have to admit the truth even earlier, because even you keep it for a few months, you just burn on like another 10, 20,000.
You just waste money.
But
you don't actually make real value.
Yeah, so the question is whether it's really have any fighting chance or not.
Yeah.
And also to me, another part is that would you dragging your team into this?
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes if it's not really working and you know that beforehand, like 6 months before, would you rather rag your team for another 6 months and then let's tell them, hey, sorry, we close.
Uh-huh.
Do that a bit earlier, or even like when you still have some money so that you have some leeway and give the team to the chance to find another jobs and taking care of them, right? So cleaning the house much more easier when you have time to do that rather than, hey, sorry, we don't have enough money and we close next day. That's actually, to me, more irresponsible of the founders if they don't see that end before.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
I see. But how do you accept the truth? for founders out there who are having that path, going that path, I'm like, hey, I don't know if my startup is the right one or not. They're having a doubt. When do you feel like it's a good time to reflect, or when it's a good time to decide if you should go on or you should stop?
It's a very, very hard thing, right? I'm lucky to have a few good mentors and friends, normally, to me, for me, it coming from my own questions, and then the bonderings, the session with all these mentors where I share my view, and then they also contributing in there. So I don't think we should take that only to ourselves. The question is whether you have a mentor or a friend that you be able to share all these things. I think that's one of the biggest problems of the founders have, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the loneliness is there because, and especially if everything is related into the company, sometimes you don't really have any friend to share,
yeah,
and get advice from, because anything mm-hmm. is sensitive.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky to have be able to have a friend to share about that uh-huh. and getting their feedback, and the feedback's mostly to get me thinking further on mm-hmm. like how much I should fight, where this going, and all of this question. But to me, it still come back to the founder self awareness and reflection.
Mm.
Yeah. Because no one can really say that for you, especially you don't want to give up too early, or you also don't want to give up too late.
Mm.
And that's a very tricky thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, when do you know to get up, give up, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's really challenging to give up, because I feel like one of the reasons might be people hesitate to stop founder is that maybe they afraid of change. What yeah. if the next thing is not as big as the one I'm doing right
yeah,
now? What
yeah.
if I'm just lucky this time and I'm yeah. not very good at this yeah, the other
yeah.
time?
Yeah.
Have you ever encountered those care? Those fear?
Mm-hmm. Not really, because I only believe there are only bigger thing out there.
Okay.
And
but what if like it's well from personal experience, right? I just yeah. feel like sometimes if I have some kind of reputations already
sure.
on
sure.
this side, right?
Yeah.
And then I start a new thing, I have to learn all over yeah. again. I would be scared
yeah.
so much that
yeah.
if I fail and people are like, oh, you're not capable.
Yeah.
I feel like, is that like a more of an imposter
no.
syndrome?
That is exactly true. I did have that
mm-hmm.
When I started Auto Financial, right? Because for Silicon Valley, it's a big companies, and for Auto Financial, I have to start everything from zero. So
yeah.
hiring the first employee, doing everything from by myself again,
mm-hmm.
and also have that fear that what if I'm not able to do it?
Yeah.
And in the, to a certain extent, I'm not really be able to bring it to the level it should be. So
mm.
Basically, I fail again.
Mm-hmm.
Back to your question, it depends on the goal that you want to set for yourself when you start anything. So if we want to start a new startup, it's always the first step of, okay, for the next three months, 6 months, or maybe a year, what we want to develop this from.
Yeah.
So basically, put more objective in there rather than put your ego in, put your feeling in, but treat that as a project and do things more proper with project planning on the management theory that you can, right?
Mm.
And see it from there. So I think the starting and the second step always difficult.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, the imposter syndrome is always there. And even I feel that a lot of time recently as well. So especially when I join this role. So this is not my the first company that I didn't found.
Yeah.
And part of the management team. And I have a lot of questions for myself also, like, would that I be perform again, or maybe I'm just lucky because that's my company, I can do whatever I want. Would I be able to do this and that? So on this question, I think natural.
But you've been here with Timo for a year already, so I think you've able to prove in yourself you're able to do things.
I guess I'd be able to overcome my fear from time to time. But the fear is always there, and I think it's a good fear. It's a fear that keep you in check. Rather than, hey, I'm invisible, so I can do anything. But rather, hey, you still have to perform. You still have to try your best. And actually, back to what I'm sharing about planning ahead, right? When looking back, I starting to see myself planning ahead. But during that period of time, I don't see any planning from actually happening. But
with example, like
for working for after Silicon Strait, right? I don't have any plan. So the way I was thinking back there is that if I start new thing, what I want to do? And it's more like attracting different type of ideas, and also, and it happened. Ideas meaning that, okay, what size of company I want to work with, what type of industry, what areas I want to specialize in, and it's even for Timo, right? Like you said, I don't have any banking background, but I like to give it a try in the banking and finance side. 2-3 years ago, it happened to happen, right? And then I ask two things: what's the skill that I already have that I can perform in this new job, and what's the new skill that I can learn from these new jobs? So it's need both, right? Because you still need the skill that you can perform so that you can at least get a job and stay at the job, and then learn from the other things. So when I get into more like operational job, that what I have, especially more managing people, building up people, and then working on the product side a little bit. So, but the banking side is not, is what I don't have, but now I have the chance to learn.
I see.
That's, I guess, is my method of getting into a new career.
Big
something that I'm already doing, and then get the new thing, a part of that.
Would you say that planning your career ahead as founder or as anyone, should it align with your personal life purpose?
Yeah. And I think life purpose is something to rent. It's rather than, okay, what you want to be in the next few years, right? What you imagine to be yourself. So, and all this thing actually to me not very specific. I don't plan exactly to work as a CEO of Timo 2-3 years ago, but the idea I have in mind is that, hey, would I be able to run a company at this size and doing these areas? And I think that's become true because you start looking for opportunities, looking for the role that fit into what you want to do, right? And why, when I say blending here, is more like dreaming and imagining yourself into the positions, and then get the things very naturally coming up.
You've been in startup for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So what is your advice for people who wanted to coming in to startup and do something? And that's number one. And another question is, for Timo, what would be the investing functions what would be Timo's strategies on encourage people into investing? Because Vietnam, people are more leaning to saving rather than investing. But I feel like there's a educational chance for Timo to help people learn about investing properly.
Yeah. So let me get the last one first.
Yes.
And you mentioned the right keywords, education. So saving is something that we want to make it to innovate a little bit on saving, right? Because actually people always want to save, but they don't have the correct way to save, or at least someone really nagging them to save. Like one of the good features for Timo is the goal save, where actually deduct immediately into your account.
Yeah, I love that.
Put it aside, so you don't have you don't have to do anything. And similarly for investment, right now what we want to focus on is actually education. because in investing can put it simply, for example, if you put your money into some sort of like term deposit, actually that's some kind of investing, right? You earn some return. So for Timo, we have one of the best rate in the market with like 6 or 7% for 1 year period. So that somewhat is a first step on investing. And then what's the other investment instrument? Actually, we also have another thing called mutual funds, and that would be not really guaranteed, but that could give you up to like 9, 10, or 11. And actually, that becomes a lot more popular right now. Even there's other app that focus on just give you to do only thing like FinHay, right? Yeah, and you can put money into a certain financial products, investment products. So, and Timo will
help you distribute that.
Help distribute that. And the education path is how we want to make sure, for example, as a millennials or any young people, if they have some like extra $5 million a month, the question is how much I should use to put this $5 million into. So the safe path, like maybe 50% of that would be put into a term deposit, so it'd be safe. The other would be like try it a bit more into the funds or maybe other investment vehicles. And of course, after the fund, there will be like stock market, gold, whatever. So what we believe is that all this kind of investment or financial product will be digitalized in Vietnam. Yeah. And Timo is the best platform to distribute that. And the reason is that we will focus on how to educate our user to understand all these products and instrument, and then they make the right choice. And actually for Vietnamese people, what I'm observing, especially on the other apps, people love this kind of like gambling aspect of it.
Yeah, gamifications.
Gambling.
Like, oh, gambling.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wait.
I mean, for example, from the mutual fund, especially for the last few months, the return actually very high because the stock market is rally.
Yeah.
So people are really happy about that because they even put in like 100 millions. And then they post on Facebook to show, hey, I'm making like $5 million in profit, but that is unrealized from the fund itself, right? But people are super excited about that, and then everyone flocking in to do the same thing.
Maybe Asian yeah. People do have a gambling.
I think the assignment is coming from a very high return.
Yeah,
and which both. Have both good and bad side, right?
But meaning then again, do you think that they get more easier panic if the stock market crash?
Definitely, that will happen, right? My point is that they need to be educated, and of course, as long as I understand, I put into here there's a high risk, high return. I am setting the risk. I willing to get the return on vice versa, right? So that's what we should focus on for the long term, rather than just throw our products out there. And especially in Vietnam, there are too many scam and cheat.
Yeah, like so many high interest guaranteed products that eventually came out.
On the Ponzi scheme. Okay. So in conclusion, investment is certainly something that that part of the whole personal finance. Advisory that we want to focus for Timo. Okay. But the other question is
your advice for people who want to be and start. Well, number one is like, do they always have to be a startup founder? What are the career path are there available in startups? And what is the choices or like what is the viable 5-year plans?
Okay. So when I speak to my staff founder friends, right, one of the common frustration is that we don't have enough good people. So everyone either want to stay at good high paying jobs or want to be the founder. No one want to work for a startup, especially on the experienced people.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So basically, if you look at staffs, right, most of them are for students or the fresh grad or those like don't really have experience because they believe stop giving them the good experience, which is true. But that's what when I start go roll to a certain stage, for example, like after 1 to 2 years, right, it's starting to need more skills, like even some sort of management skills. There's lack of, like, people don't understand how to manage other people, don't understand how to manage the finance, like accounting, doing proper sales, doing marketing, right? Because the person with the relevant skills is not, first of all, not willing to join startups and not affordable for the startups. So my advice is that actually the best time for you to do startups is not when you just graduate, but rather you go out there, getting a job, work for 3-5 years, get into a certain level, let's say senior enough. Then you use startups to actually jumpstart your career from there. Because when you join a startup with that type of experience, normally you in a typical bigger company, you may be just a team leader. But if you're good enough in a startup, you may be going through a manager, managing the whole function yourself. That's more challenging, but you will learn a lot more. And together with all the skills, including management, leadership, and maybe learning other part business. For example, if you do remarketing, but then now you have to work with products, so you understand about product, understand about customer service. So that is the time when you learn a lot more because you have already have the foundation. And then the career will be fast track because if you perform well at that role, then the next company that you are doing, you are skipping like 3-4 years at the team leader level already. And that's something I believe if the people if they want really want to try the startup route, joy at the right time is both beneficial for both for you and the startups, because as a startup founders, they also don't have enough skills and to run on the different areas, but someone with good experience coming in is very helpful. And let me give you an example for Bravo HR right now. I'm lucky to bring in one of very good CEOs. She's been working with big MNCs for more than 10 years. She is executive assistant to the CEOs of one of biggest pharmaceutical company. And she joined us, started as a business development because she wanted to try new things. And after just 6 months, we promote her to CEOs, and now she runs the company for the last 2 years. Very, very successful. Because that's a good career step up for her, and that's for us is we have someone with a good foundation, ability to work with big MNCs to sell our software. So
it's a good shortcut, I would say?
Yeah, it was a good shortcut. Mm. And as a as founder to hiring the key executive, that's a very good and lucky candidate for me because she come in and she perform already. I don't need to train her, and she also very hungry as any other founder out there. But if she start the company herself, probably she wouldn't, and probably maybe she have a higher chance of failure because she don't have other skills required to start a company, but she have enough skill to
manage
a company that already been set up. So now I think that's an area where in Vietnam the staff would need a lot. I think we have enough founder to bring the staff to its first year. So either the founder have to be able to do a very good recruitment to bring in key hire, are getting more people to join at that stage to help those founders to go to the next level.
That's otherwise, actually very interesting because it's usually hard for founders to give up their babies. Mm. And in startup, there's a saying basically that at each stage of the startup, you need different types of CEO.
Sure.
And basically that means that founders have to willing to step down from the highest positions and let somebody ride the ship. Mm. And that's really interesting.
Yeah. And I don't mean the other cases is like my company where someone would be coming in as a CEO, but rather the founder is still there. But maybe the founder would only focus on product or tech or certain areas, but he willing to bring in someone that if that person perform, he can put that person as a co-founder status,
mm.
and treat that person similar as a co-founders. And I think that's a rare thing to see, but I think that would be very beneficial if the founder accepting that. And he doesn't have to step up as CEO or anything, but rather, okay, I'm not good at finance. I'm not good at HR. I'm willing to bring in this person to help me with that.
Mm.
And then that would be solving a lot, because the founders that I'm seeing are trying to do anything by himself
or
herself. This is not the right way to build a startup.
Yeah. Would you have the same... So what would your advice for founders? Like, where do you plan ahead when you're already at the top? If you've already found a company, you're already the top management, you're already able to do whatever you want. What is a good method to keep yourself moving forward every single day?
Yeah. I think as a founder and probably maybe a CEO, right, a company... stop thinking that you at the top.
I see. Okay.
No, because your race there is not about with other people below you, but actually it with the market, with the competitors.
Yeah.
And with the bigger size that company could become.
Mm.
So you should be striving for, okay, how my company can be bigger, how my company can beating that competitors. How I can, for example, if I have 100 employees today, how I can grow to 200. If I have 1 million revenue today, how I can grow into 5 million. Because if you put things in perspective, right, there's a lot of exciting or challenging thing that you could learn, especially if the revenue from 1 million to 5 million, that's a total new play field for you out there. And normally you will start seeing that, hey, then if that's the case, then I would only want to be focused on doing sales. The managing internally, I would either fire an operation guy or some co-founder that can have me to manage the staff so that I can go out and do the sales so that we can multiply the revenues.
Yeah.
Right? So if you put the company growth as something to look forward to, then you will start seeing your career to be expand.
I see.
Yeah. So one example is that I think back so a few years ago, also asking myself, I've been managing a company valuation at a few millions already. So the next thing would be how I can pop the team that might be a company at 20 million, 50 million, 100 million. So that's more venture capital type start thinking. But
yeah,
that might be one good way. Then. And then that may be putting a certain stop into, like, okay, would I be able to bring myself to that stage or not? Because like I share, maybe the business is not good enough,
yeah,
and the product is not good enough, the market is not there. So I'd rather put it a stop, close it down, clean it up, and then...
But profitable is not enough?
Profitable is always a good thing. And if you are profitable, that you can always go on. The question is that, would you rather keep doing that, or you want to bring in someone that doing that for you, so that you free yourself to do the next big thing, or maybe you restart the start from a different angle or something.
I see. Hmm. Any other questions?
Yeah, I think advice for startups, right? Another advice, actually similar to that, is...
Sorry. Could you do it again?
Okay. For advice for startups, another one should be I think as a founder, you don't apply yourself to be always be a founder. It's okay for you to apply for other job again. So some founder that
it's not a failure to stepping down from a founder position to other management position.
Yeah, I think if you're talking about the reputation you build for yourself, right? So if you once I feel that there's a thinking that once a founder always a founder. I stuck in that as well. But after all, that is the question on what's it the play field? What's it the play bigger playground that you can be part of and grow yourself? Because there's the research says the best time to start a company is actually 45. So most of my friends and maybe on the audience out there, that you have plenty of time, right? So yeah. Now you can. Maybe you are doing a stop for yourself. If it's not going anywhere, maybe put it a stop. Join another big company. Learn the skill that you lacking of. And I think the stopping a car stop is actually a very painful experience. But if you go through with a right mindset, meaning what did I do wrong? What skill that I lack of? If I tried it again, what should be changed, right? So at least you're looking for what it be the gap in your skill set and the gap in your abilities, and then allow yourself for the next 2-3 years, 5 years, or even 10 years to learn that, and then start again and with new perspective, new skill, new network, and even like new money. Then you of course you can build a bigger, better one.
Mm. And would you say it's better for founders to start up their own business when they're a bit more mature? Because you started a company when you were like 19, right? The first company.
Yeah, and that's not even a company.
It's a project, I'll say. But yeah, your first startup, yeah. And that was when you're 19. And would you say you would recommend people doing that?
I think just take what life gives you, actually.
Mm.
Pretty much about what I'm saying is planning and thinking ahead, but to me, I still go with the flow a lot.
Yeah.
So if things comes up and if you feel right, just do it. And you are connecting the dot looking backward anyway. Right?
Mm.
So for me, looking backward, a lot of things that I did in the past without really thinking, planning, decide, just jump into it, and it happened to bring me into the right path, right?
Mm.
Even like meeting Obama.
Let's talk about that.
It's actually something very, very. Actually, I wrote a Medium post about that, called Connecting the Dot, because it's a very random event that leading up to it.
Okay.
If I reflecting, but then when things happen, you happy about it. So don't force yourself too much. Don't try to plan and be hard on yourself if things doesn't really go your way.
Yeah,
I think that period is a lot of reflection from myself and able to like put it down, right?
Yeah.
Put it out, write it out. But I didn't do much recently.
Yeah.
But I think the writing's good when you want to reflect on your experience and also, of course, want to share with others.
Yeah. Would you say following your guts is something that founders should really keep it close to their heart whenever they operate?
I think for founder, most founder that I know, they have a very strong intuition. And of course, following the gut, many people mentioned that's something that they do. I think I'm doing that as well. So, on the other side, right, following your gut here, to me, is more about you should follow your gut as long as you spend enough time already thinking about it.
Mm.
Because it's the following the gut, I think it's just a way to express whatever you cannot explain about the decisions.
Mm.
And sometimes if you think enough about something, right, the problems,
yeah,
the solutions will come out.
Mm.
And sometimes you cannot explain why the solution would be that way, but you feel it's right. And I think that's as long as you spend enough effort into looking for some sort of solution for the problem that you are facing, you should follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are other mechanisms that you can make sure that you don't fall into the trap of this or that by like talking to friends, mentors, and all of that. But I guess as a founder, especially in a startup environment, you have to make decisions very quickly. and many decisions have to be made in a day, in an hour, so that you don't really have time to really check this and that, slap our
book, due diligence,
do due diligence, and as long as you feel right about it, I think you should follow your gut.
I see. Would you say that you did follow your gut when you decided not to work in Singapore? When I know that you study there in Singapore and you have an opportunity to stay, but then you eventually decide to come back.
Yeah. Actually, the decision for me to come back like 11 years ago, of course, my parents not happy about it. My friend is still questioning.
Your friend was still questioning why you didn't stay in Singapore?
Yeah. But actually, after a while, they're not even bothered to ask.
Okay.
Anyway, I think...
And your friends here are people who study in Singapore with you?
Yeah. Mm. But then eventually, I found out 70-80% of my friends in Singapore already come back.
I see.
Not many of them actually staying. They either go to another country or move back, because Singapore right now is actually quite a tough place to stay.
It's kind of boring though. Speaking from personal experience, yeah. I'm not no offended to anyone from Singapore.
No, fully agree. Especially for 11 years ago. I worked there for 3 years and I think the part of the reason for me to come back, not just because Singapore is boring, but also I haven't, like, again, follow the gut and chances, right? Part of the association called Vietnam 2020.
Mm.
And in that Vietnam 2020 is an organization for all the Vietnamese professionals in Singapore. And we organize activities and events. And one of the smaller team we call Vietnam 2020 Enterprise is for
2020 is the year 2020 or
the year 2020.
Okay.
Today the year. And,
okay.
And actually, Vietnam 2020 founded by Võ Tán Hưng. With a vision for this year.
I see.
So that's a 10 years vision. So.
I see. Is the vision met the expectation? Reality met expectation?
No, I think it certain way, yes.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the member of Vietnam 2020 are actually in Vietnam right now and doing great things for Vietnam, actually.
That's great.
And we...
Sorry, my nose is so itchy or something. No worry.
So that is a Vietnam 2020 enterprise family where we're supposed to gather and doing entrepreneurship things. Right.
I see.
And we try different ideas, starting some projects, and eventually we found our business ideas, and then there's 10 of us back then, and we found a company, me and another friend are the first one to actually come back to Vietnam and start the operation here. So
I see.
Things happen by chance and by plan. My plan here is that we say, okay, we want to come to Vietnam, but how? And instead of just go back to Vietnam and start exploring, we start a company in Singapore and set up in here, and that's that company called TGM that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. When we come back to Vietnam in June 2009. And during that month, we also organized the first Tô Tài Giỏi summer camp, with 100 students.
Mm.
So it's quite a set at the beginning already. And that's still a happy decision until now.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And what is your inner personal reason for that? Because, I think that a lot of people, especially Vietnamese overseas students who went overseas and had a chance to stay, a lot of them always debate on if I should stay or if I should go back.
Yeah.
Where should I go? What is your personal reason for your choice?
There's a few reasons. One's more practical. One is during that time also flew back and forth. And Vietnam is more fun. Food is better. So I'm able to travel different places in Vietnam. So I enjoy Vietnam more than went back to Singapore and work.
Right? Yeah.
And second, for all is that back then I was a subway engineer working for Fuji Xerox. And I look at the company I'm working at, right? My boss, my team leader, is 40 years old. The manager above him is 50 years old. The CEO is 60 years old.
Hmm.
So looking at that, and then at the point of time alone, I am only 22. Actually, I'm lucky to be part of the team that went to U.S. to actually doing project there for almost a year in Rochester, New York. And over there, I also seeing own people.
Okay. Okay, so there's a reason related to old people here.
No, I mean like look at the company and especially at that point there's no startups in Singapore or anything.
Yeah.
So most of those are still very traditional company, even though it's work in tech, engineering, whatever. But the career is slow.
Yeah.
Meaning, maybe after 5-7 years, I've been promoted into a team leader, for example, and then. There's not many jobs out there. I'm actually not really a top class graduation, so I don't really access to much of the good opportunity working in banking, even though like after graduation, I try to apply for MT program here and there, but on fail. Maybe my grades are not good enough.
Yeah.
But in Singapore, what I'm saying back then is that would there be a fast-track career path for me? In this environment, or I'm still in a foreigner working in a sector where actually it's still very competitive, and I have to like keep working hard to be able to do something different. So and in Vietnam, a lot of opportunity back then when I travel back and then I see my friend doing this, my friend doing that, and I also feel that in Vietnam I will be more independent. I have more opportunities to do certain things, and that become true.
Mm.
Yeah, and even until now, more and more the starting. I'm able to see in Vietnam compared to Singapore.
Mm, I see.
Yeah,
I think that's a good ending for the episode. Thank you so much for sharing a lot of insights about working in Vietnam and especially in startup as well. I think for startup, a lot of people think that you go big, you go broke, right? But from today, I learned that there's other paths, that there are options, and also there's factors of like when to stop or when to know that you should be ready for the next thing.
Yeah.
And today I feel, like you actually educated me a lot of that because personally, I just feel like before I wouldn't understand the concept of like, oh, why would you have an exit plan? I thought that's your baby. Why would you go for life with a baby, right? That's your baby, right? But then, so today I understand that, there are other options.
Yep.
And when people have different type of personal goal,
yep.
then a startup shouldn't be what define your life, but it should be a path for you to build your own personal development.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if the audience today, after they listening to the episode and they enjoy it and they want to reach out to you, then how do they find you?
Actually, I able to secure a very good handler for Twitter, Facebook, Mediums. Everything is Bùi Hải An. You can search Bùi Hải An. I think I'm unique enough in those spaces as well.
Uh-huh.
So I have Mediums, I have LinkedIn, I have Facebook. I'm more active on Facebook and LinkedIn.
I see. Bùi Hải An is BUIHAIAN.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you again for coming on the episodes. Thank you for being the first guest to join Whiskey with me. Other episode, like the guest just let me drink by myself. So I'm pretty happy that this happened today.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Yes, absolutely. And for the audience, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to reach out to Anan. Let us know if you like the episode. Rate this on iTunes. Let us know like what your thought on this episode and what would you want to hear from Vietnam Rising podcast, or what are the guests that you're looking for to see on the show? Again, thank you for tuning in on this episode, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.